if I could put it in a succinct way, we're trying to create Zacchaeus' house somewhere. What a joy. What an adventure. Mm. The battle is raising confidence amongst our people to bring their friends. Because I think there is that sense of, I don't want to risk relationship. I don't want to come across as judgmental. I don't want to be preachy or pushy.
Hey everyone, I'm Bishop Jeff Bailey. Welcome to the C4SO podcast.
Gare, welcome to the podcast. So good to have you here.
Jeff, awesome to see you and thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I want to talk about evangelism in this conversation, in part because I think that we don't talk about it enough. And so I want to think about how we talk about it better and more effectively. I grew up in Baptist circles where we didn't necessarily do evangelism very well. It was done in all kinds of cheesy and programmatic kinds of ways that we would look back at now and cringe. But we did talk about it, and in whatever kind of faltering ways, tried to put some practices into place. It was part of the conversation. And then I remember my first year at seminary in Chicago. This is before I was in the Vineyard and going to Willow Creek. I was so struck there as a first-year seminarian of being surrounded by hundreds or even thousands of non-Christians who were showing up week in and week out. It was a huge part of the passion of what drove things there. And I'm struck by our own context today. If I compare today with that time that I was at Willow, this is back in the 90s or when I was growing up in the 80s in the Baptist world, evangelism is not on the agenda in the same kind of way. I wonder, how would you describe the state of the conversation or the state of evangelism in the American church today?
It's a great question, Jeff. And I do resonate with what you're saying. I don't think it's on the agenda as much as maybe discipleship or other things. And I think there's lots of reasons for that, lots of reasons I empathize with. I think everyone wants to see their friends come to Christ. I think every church wants non-Christians to become followers. But we're in a place where there's so many different things and so many forces actually preventing us leaning into those, into that, into evangelism. And I think, first of all, we know in this cultural moment, it's in many places, it's not popular to be a Christian. And so we do know there's a kind of sense of, wow, I'll face opposition. And so there's a natural kind of pullback from that. I think secondly, I think churches are kind of reacting a bit to the megachurch experience maybe they grew up with, or the seeker-sensitive model they grew up with. And for all of its benefits, some have said there's a critique of it wasn't deep enough in discipleship. And there's a whole generation coming out of that going, I want depth. And evangelism seems to be kind of counter to that. You can't have both, it seems. I want a depth in one of three directions, I find. People want a depth in teaching, or a depth in spiritual formation, liturgical practices, or a depth in charismatic expression. They're looking for depth. And evangelism seems to be something that you have to choose one or the other. You can go wide or you can go deep. And so lots of people are going, man, I grew up with wide and I was underfed. I just want to be fed. I've discovered a richness of these traditions or a richness of teaching, and evangelism would compromise that. And so I think there's a fear of that. And I also think with that, certainly in a church planting movement that we are growing a church, often we would love it to be through conversion, but that's slow and hard. I think most people are looking for sustainability. They're looking for how can we get our church to a place that's healthy? We need to grow. And the easiest way to do that is to find Christians who are longing for your expression of the kingdom, which, again, I'm not saying that's wrong, but church planters have to find self-sustainability quick. You know, you can't have non-Christians in your kids' ministry. You can't have non-Christians lead community groups. You need Christians. And so church growth comes from transfer growth more than conversion growth. And in fact, when I planted Vintage, when my wife and I planted Vintage back in 2011, most of the church planting books were using methodologies to attract people that would really only attract Christians. It wasn't really evangelistic. I think Tim Keller said the most effective form of evangelism is planting new churches. And I go, that's true if you take away from that church planter kind of the self-sustainability kind of trauma of I need to grow. Yeah. And then finally, I think what you find, I found growing up, even if I have a heart for evangelism, even if I go, we've got to reach the lost of our city, we have a methodological barrier, which is the old ways that I've been taught to do it just don't seem to be relevant or effective to my city context. Mm. That we've got proclamation models, we've got, I would say, moment models like teach the gospel, pray for someone on the street. Yeah. It's very momentary. But we know all of our friends, all of our city need a much longer journey. They've got questions that want to be answered. They've got hurt they want to express. They want to say what they believe and not just be told. They've got postmodernism kind of swishing around where they want to experience more than just be told. So we kind of know intuitively that our friends wouldn't respond well to just someone preaching at them on the streets or in a church. We know they want dialogue, they want community, they want a process, they want to explore. But our churches don't really offer that. We haven't been trained to do that. And we don't want that to happen on Sundays because that compromises the depth of what we want.
Right.
And so I do honestly think most people are in this paralysis of going, I know we should want it, and maybe I do want it, but I don't know how.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I'm thinking as you're describing that, we're also in a different cultural moment than we were, say, in the 80s or even the 90s in terms of the way that Christianity is viewed, where even if people were keeping some distance from it, it was still viewed as a largely good or benign force culturally. But not today. I mean, now there's massive barriers in terms of Christianity often being viewed as a major part of the problem. If you want to be a good person, if you want to work towards the good of the world, 100%. Christianity is viewed in a very different way, which makes evangelism that much more challenging, even for Christians to think about how to engage in a way that doesn't feel offensive to their friends.
Oh, 100%, Jeff. I mean, I grew up in an atheistic context, but the Christians had they were the moral, you know, goody two-shoes of society. They would be the moral high ground. And if anything, we were people who felt, man, you guys just do good all the time, but we don't believe in what you believe. Well, where we used to have the high moral ground in society, now we're viewed as the low moral ground, that we are what is wrong with society. People view Christianity as a community of hate, of exclusion, of judgmentalism, of scandals, hypocrisy. Why on earth, if I'm looking for spirituality, why on earth would I look there? And so people are looking at that going, that's not attractive. And if I'm longing, if I've got a hole in my heart, I know cannot be filled with leisure, pleasure, treasure, I'm still not going to look at Christianity. And I'll go to, you know, hot yoga or microdosing. You know, I'll look at those spiritual experiences. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily going to look over here. Now, Jeff, interestingly, I feel a bit of the shift is happening in Los Angeles, where people who didn't grow up with maybe that negative church experience are softening a bit there. Not towards the church, but softening to Jesus. But they still got big hang-ups of the church. And so we're still facing the Christians. I don't want to be a Christian, but I'm interested in this Jesus guy. And in fact, someone who came to follow Jesus at Vintage not so long ago said, I can't actually come out and say to my friends, I'm now a Christian. I think I can say I'm a follower of Jesus, but I can't say I'm a Christian because of all the baggage that means.
So if we want to help churches that say, we want to engage evangelistically in thoughtful and intentional and strategic ways, bearing in mind, however, that the old models that we're exposed to don't work, and we're in a higher barrier context now than we ever have been culturally in terms of how to do this. And so that state of paralysis that you described, many would say we do feel a bit paralyzed. How do we take meaningful steps forward? What would you say to those churches? Where should they start?
I get it. And I think the first place to start is prayer and to ask God to break our heart for the lost. To be in a position where doing nothing is not an option. Not because we should, but because we are compelled by the love of Christ. I'm always moved by Acts 16, where Paul has a vision of a man of Macedonia. And if you notice in that, which I often glossed over, the man in Macedonia was not saying, come and bring the gospel to us. It was a man begging for help.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is God told Paul to bring the gospel to the Macedonians, not through a should or an ought or a command, but simply showing him the need, breaking his heart for those who don't know Jesus. So I would say to all of us, we should always ask the Holy Spirit to keep our hearts tender towards the lost, not see them as enemies, not see them as opponents in a culture war.
Yeah.
I mean, of course they're not behaving in a way we'd want them to behave because they're blind. You know, they don't know Jesus. And Jesus had compassion and wept over. So I would just say, start there. Start with your whole church to go break our heart for our city. Do you remember what it was like to not know Jesus? We often take our staff out of a staff meeting and wander around the streets. And we say, ask the Holy Spirit to give you an insight into what's happening behind the curtains, what's happening behind the doors of the homes in which we live, to realize the pain, to realize the chaos, to realize the loneliness of trying to handle life without Jesus. So start there. I think secondly, with that kind of a hostage to, we've got to do something because we can hear the cries of the lost of our city, then honestly think, well, let me think of a real example, maybe a friend, maybe a child, maybe a colleague, and just be really honest and say, what would that person need to explore Jesus? And then you realize, I don't think that's just coming to Sunday. I don't think that's giving them a book. I think that's something, I think it's more relational. I think it's more conversational. And then simply going, what if we designed something that actually would help that person, would actually love that person? So think of real people and go, I know that person. So what would I do for them? If they want to explore spirituality, if they want to ask the big questions of life, what's the forum that they would feel honors where they're at to explore? And I kind of think this is what Jesus did. When Jesus saw Zacchaeus up a tree, you know, Zacchaeus is hated by his countrymen for colluding with the Romans, right? Jesus did not say, Zacchaeus, come down and come to church. I think he knew that Zacchaeus was afraid of church. I think he knew Zacchaeus would feel unsafe. He said, what did he say? He said, Zacchaeus, I'm coming to your house. So he allowed exploration of Jesus in an environment that Zacchaeus would feel safe. And I think we have to do the tough work of going, do we have a Zacchaeus house? Do we have a place, an evening, a meeting, an opportunity where explorers can genuinely feel safe to explore Jesus and to help them explore him faithfully? And I think that's when you really start. I think it's an exciting adventure. You start to ideate with your church. What can we do? What can we do? And then just give it a go, you know, give it a go and see what happens.
Thinking about people in their engagement with their friends, with their neighbors, with their colleagues, with the non-Christians who are in their life. Evangelism feels like a daunting word. It feels like pressure. My wife will talk about being part of a campus ministry during college in which it was evangelistically intentional, but it meant everybody felt like a project. And so what does it mean to step back from that, to think about how do I engage in genuine and loving ways with the people in my life with a concern for evangelism, but that isn't viewing people as projects, that helps engage in a way that's authentic and genuinely loving to people?
Yeah, no one likes target evangelism. You know, it's impersonal. You come across as just we don't like that. Evangelism has to be loving, you know. And so what I say to people, I was not a pastor until I was 35. So I was in a workplace all of my 20s, and I loved being in that environment to share the love of Jesus. And I think what I found helpful was someone's advice to me this. They just said, look, love your friends. Just be a friend and follow Jesus around your friends. Don't try and preach at them. Don't try and find subtle opportunities to kind of bring the gospel in. Don't try to leave a tract under the seat. You know, just be an authentic follower of Jesus around your friends. And I think that does one or two things. First of all, you will start to be a curiosity to them, because if you genuinely follow Jesus around your friends, you'll live a different way. Mm-hmm. You'll live a different life. You'll be forgiving your enemies. You'll be loving those who persecute you. You'll be giving away generously. You'll be serving the outcast sacrificially. You'll be helping those who are competitive in your business. You'll be wanting to serve your clients with integrity. You know, it's just, you will start to go, you live a different way.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's actually off-putting for people, as Jesus was off-putting to people. But sometimes, and I think most of all, you become a compelling curiosity, where people actually are drawn to you over time because they're living the narrative of leisure, pleasure, treasure is supposed to fulfill me, but they know it's not. And there are moments in life where they know it's not. When they're going through tension or trauma or tragedy in their life, they know that something is missing. And you are around them, showing them a different way. And that's rooted in Jesus. So I say, just live a life authentically around Jesus, not target, and then be authentic vocally. And I think that's really important. Be authentic vocally around them. And what I mean by that is, if you find a great cup of coffee, you go, this is amazing, and you can't wait to tell people about it. Well, don't hold back from just saying Jesus is amazing, not in a preachy way, but just being, so if someone says, I used to always love the question, hey, Gare, what did you do this weekend on a Monday morning at work? And I'd love it because I was just authentic. I'd say Friday night, went to the pub. Saturday, slept in, watched the rugby, went to see a movie, a rubbish movie. Sunday morning, went to church. And actually, I think I heard the voice of God, actually. It was really beautiful. Just what I needed to hear. Then I went for lunch and then just rested, right?
Yeah.
They're just seeing this authentic joy and this real, then they asked you a question and you're being authentic.
Yeah. And you're not trying to jump in and go deep.
No.
You're not trying to look for, like, no. you're being honest about your life, but bringing all of it in.
Don't hide your enthusiasm for Jesus, but don't see it as an opportunity to preach at them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference. I think we've been taught to look for moments of proclamation as opposed to just be authentic without being pushy or preachy. And you know what? People will, and I found this, people will notice, wow, hang on a minute. God spoke to you. What does that mean? Hang on a minute, you said someone was healed. Whoa, rewind, you know? What's that about? I do think it's, people were like, what's going on? There were signs and wonders. Why don't you just be a sign and a wonder so people actually wonder what's going on in your life as opposed to you telling them? Let them ask.
Yes. Yes.
So I just think live authentically, fully alive, without preaching, without pushing, but just responding authentically. And then what I find is have something to invite them to that you think will be a blessing to them as to explore Jesus.
Yeah.
That there's going to be a moment in your friend's life where you go, you know what, mate? I think you should check this out. You don't have to come, but we're having this evening on is there more to life than leisure, pleasure, treasure? You should come listen to this guy.
Yeah.
And you've built credibility. You know, you've built a relationship. And that's not target evangelism. That is helping them. And I think people, when they know you're a friend and you're just not pushy, but you see an opportunity that you genuinely think will help them with what they're going through, then they actually feel loved and cared for. And so I call them on-ramps, right? Does your church have on-ramps that non-Christians would go, that is actually helpful for me. Yeah. I do want to know how to parent my kids a better way because I'm lost, you know. I do want to know how to keep my marriage together because I don't know if it's going to survive much longer. Mm. And you're helping people in the way of Jesus without, again, preaching at them, being pushy. And you're just helping them with opportunities that feel right for where people are at.
To what degree can or should Sundays be an on-ramp? So we're trying to form Christians and disciples in that context. But for many people, if they're having these kinds of authentic conversations, a potential next step for them, even before something like Alpha or a course or any number of things, might be to just come to church on Sunday.
Yeah. And we find that here as well.
How do churches navigate that space in which they are taking formation of Christians seriously and also making it accessible and interesting and hospitable in genuine ways to people who are just in the exploring stage? Mm. Are those at odds? Is there a way of doing authentic depth and formation for Christians that is also compelling and accessible to non-Christians where you can bring them on Sundays?
You know what, Jeff? I think there is. And I know that's a question that really is emotional for some people because they really don't want to sacrifice their depth. And I want to encourage folks, I don't think you have to sacrifice any depth, but still be accessible for the non-Christian in the room. And to actually, what we call here at Vintage, double impact. We want to feed the following and help the exploring. And that's not by dumbing down what we do, but it's simply by explaining what's going on so they feel, okay, you're helping to for me to understand what's going on. But also they're joining in something which is intentionally deep where they go, what is this? You know, a friend of mine came to a church service once and a lot of charismatic stuff was happening. And I went home thinking, oh no, what's he going to think? And I said, well, how did you find it? And he went, well, it's different. But he said, but I guess if God's real, that kind of stuff would happen. And I think it's, we don't want to actually show them we're just like you. Mm-hmm. We want to show them this is what following Jesus is like. And we're giving them a sample of it. And I think what we say at Vintage is this, let's be deep, be rich, let's feed the following, but make it accessible and help the explorer. And we do that in a number of ways. We welcome the explorer every Sunday, so we recognize they're in the room. And also that helps Christians go, oh, I can bring someone here because we're going to acknowledge them.
What do you say? How do you welcome them?
Every Sunday morning, welcome to Vintage. It's great to see you. Whether you're a follower of Jesus or you're exploring Jesus, we're so glad you're here. And if you're exploring, we just hope you feel blessed and relax. And we're just so glad you're here. We know church can be daunting. So welcome. We'd love to have you. So just recognize that they're there.
Yeah.
Then we go through the service with just an eye on, is there anything in our service that if I was not a Christian, it'd be helpful for me if someone explained that to me? And we do that through everything. So in the songs, are any of the lyrics like just really incomprehensible that we go, you know what? We should sing a different song because that just makes no sense. No one knows what an Ebenezer is, you know, or what, you know, whatever it may be, right? I'm going to raise my Ebenezer, you know. So we just make sure that the lyrics of songs are as much as possible, not diluting them. But if there's a word or two, we actually may change the word. You know, there's a song called Night and Day, Day and Night Let Incense Arise. Don't tell the copyright people this, but no one in LA, if you say incense arise, you're thinking of a yoga studio. So we just say night and day, day and night, let worship arise. You know, it's just,
yeah,
we're helping. And then when it comes to the sermon, we don't dumb it down, but we will explain difficult words that a non-Christian would go, ooh. So I will just drop in an explanation of sin that makes sense to a non-Christian.
Yeah.
So in this passage, you see that Jesus is calling this group of people sinners. By the way, that's Jesus's way of just calling those people who haven't followed, who have rejected God. He's not criticizing them. He's just, you know, we'll just explain it. Yeah. I will, in that sermon, be honest and have an empathy of, if I was a non-Christian here, what would I be asking about this passage? And what I realized is, if I explain that, most of the Christians in the room were asking the same thing. And it was helpful for them. But I do have an eye on, look, 95% of this sermon is going to be really deep, exegetical teaching for our church. But I'm going to have an eye on, is there anything here that a non-Christian would go, what on earth is that? Mm. But I don't find that's just the non-Christians. The Christians are helped there. So the illustration we give is, imagine you have a family tradition over Christmas that you all wake up in the morning, you have your family tradition, you come downstairs in your pajamas, you open presents, whatever. Well, imagine your like 18-year-old daughter brings her boyfriend for Christmas. Mm-hmm. He has no idea what's going on, but You're not going to change what you do. You want him to join in what you do, but you are going to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
So he's not lost. Well, and you may actually change a couple of things that it's a bit awkward. You may say to your wife, look, put a dressing gown on. It's just, you just maybe change a few things that aren't essential. And I think what happens is, what really is beautiful is non-Christians start to want to come back because they recognize that was helpful.
Mm.
I wasn't lost. I didn't feel like ashamed of, I didn't know enough. And then what happens is people start to bring their non-Christian friends because they know that service will be helpful for them.
Mm.
And so, again, don't dumb down, but you can be hospitable to the non-believer.
So talk about the next step in that, assuming that folks are engaging with their friends, that we've started with a heart for people. People are engaging with their friends. They may bring them to church on Sunday. But going back to that illustration you used of Zacchaeus' house, how we create those kinds of spaces in which we can have a different kind of conversation, but in a context in which they feel maximum levels of comfort and safety to be able to do that. What does that look like for you at Vintage? How does Alpha play into that? How should people be thinking about that as a possibility?
Yeah, I think I see it as my pastoral care for our city, that I create a space like a Zacchaeus house, like a safe space for people to explore Jesus. I don't see that as an optional thing. It's just that's what I need to do to care for and preach the gospel in our city, is church will not be for everyone. I need to have almost have two Sundays a week, a Sunday for Christians and a Sunday for non-Christians. And otherwise we have to collapse them together, and that's where you have dumbed down services. And so we separate it out and go create a space where a non-Christian can be helped. And we found Alpha the best tool for that. I mean, Alpha is just going, let's create a space for non-Christians to explore Jesus, which Jesus did, right? The crowd, he allowed the crowds just to look on, be up a tree. He allowed that outdoor environment was safe for them to explore Jesus. And so we've said, look, Alpha's the best tool we know.
Yeah.
And I see it as just as important as Sundays, because it kind of is. It's like, it's a Sunday for non-Christians. And so we do that on Tuesday nights, and we create a space where people can go, okay, that's safe. You'll go on a journey with me. You'll help me to explore him in a way that feels loving, listening, learning, friendship, knowing that people that followed, like onlookers, looked at Jesus for quite a while before they followed him. Mm. And we want to actually create that space where we can allow that slow exploration as well. Discipleship is slow. So is evangelism. We've always had a view of discipleship slow, evangelism quick. Not in the New Testament. Both are slow.
Evangelism quick in a kind of decision-oriented framework.
Yeah. It's like, preach at them and they'll be saved. It's like, well, Jesus had all these people looking for a while. I think there's a journey for people to overcome barriers and hurts. Now, eventually, the Holy Spirit will just crash into their life and they'll be saved. But so we do create that space. So Alpha for us is that beautiful space where people can bring their non-Christian friends and their non-Christian friends can go on a journey. I don't know if I could be a pastor without that space, because I'm either going to just do Sundays and feed the following, or I'm going to collapse evangelism into the Sunday and dumb it down. And I don't want to do either one of those. It means, of course, it's a bit more work. But I kind of feel those are my priorities, and I try and have other people do other things because that's the priority.
It sounds like you describe Alpha as almost another Sunday service. Happens on Tuesday night.
100%. 100%. We look at it that way.
This is as high as a priority as a Sunday service for Christians to feed, to do formation, to do discipleship, and that Tuesday night's Alpha is equally as high a priority a service of what you're doing, and it's geared towards non-Christians.
100%.
Is that an accurate read of what I'm...
It's 100%. And I actually think that's, in my view, I just feel convicted as I read the New Testament, as I read the Gospels of Jesus. He was out on the streets, you know? He was mixing it up amongst those who didn't follow him, and he prioritized, you know, even Luke 15, you know, leave the 99, go after the one. I know that's not an exact exegesis, but, you know, there's this at least an equal emphasis, if not a priority for the lost. And so what's the best way to catalyze a church? Well, to reach the lost is to go, okay, well, we have this whole other service for non-Christians tailored for them. Yeah. And it's called Alpha, and you can bring your friends to that. And we don't dumb down Sundays, but it's like these beautiful open doors to the city, but there's two of them. Yeah. And we budget accordingly. We go, look, Alpha's not expensive when you see it as how much do we spend on Sundays? Mm. And actually, therefore, what do we spend on the lost as another Sunday? And they become the two benchmarks. Not benchmark, they become the two pillars of our ministry. Then after that, we do other things. I think sometimes we go Sundays and then what? We go Sunday and Alpha and then what? Because I think they're both at the same level.
So talk to me about the core elements of Alpha, at least the way that you do it there at Vintage, that makes it work. What's the atmosphere? What's the mechanics of it that are essential to its success, at least as you've seen that play out for you there in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I think what we've seen is Alpha is a beautiful combination of the gospel in its variety of forms. You've got a 10-week journey of the gospel through words, a very beautiful proclamation of the gospel. Every week, something about Jesus. Then you have the gospel in works of love. So you've got people actually befriended and experiencing the love of community, which is often the softening of their heart to the message of Jesus. And then you've got the wonders of Jesus that people actually experience his presence. They actually are awakened, particularly on the day away or the retreat that we do. We make space for people to be prayed for, to encounter Jesus. Most people in the Gospels encountered Jesus and experienced him and then followed him, right? So we want to create space for the non-Christian to go, oh my gosh, I wonder what that was. I wonder what that feeling of peace is. And in John's Gospel, he'd say, well, that's a sign and a wonder, you know? Wonders make you wonder. So I think Alpha is a beautiful 10-week, beautiful cocktail of the words, works, and wonders of Jesus. And then the challenge that we have then is how do we get them on it? How do we get people to come? I think what we found at Vintage is that's quite a big barrier because people have lots of conceptions about church, which are not very positive, and lots of Christians think, how do I invite someone without being, you know? So we work very hard to create Alpha as a space where we have confidence it's going to be a great experience for non-Christians. Confidence breeds invitation. And then secondly, we give people a sample. We know non-Christians aren't going to come to 10 weeks if they don't know what it's about. Everyone now, before they commit to anything, wants a sample, either a review online or watching it online. They want a little experience to make sure I want to go to that. So we provide like a one-off evening before Alpha begins, of kind of like an Alpha sample. Bring your friends to this, get them to experience it. They'll have a great night. We make it the best night of the week. I mean, it's amazing fun. And I just simply explain what Alpha is and share my story about Alpha and then say, if you want to do Alpha, now you've experienced a bit of what it's like and I'll tell you the journey. Why don't you come next week and do it with us? So we found much more success in bringing people to a sample event, a taste of Alpha, rather than just, hey, do you want to do Alpha?
Yeah. For those folks who have at some point along the way tried Alpha, maybe it worked for a little bit of time, or maybe it was actually helpful for some in their church who were going through it and it had a season, but it then dropped off or it was difficult to continue. And folks will say, we've tried Alpha, but it just didn't work for us or in this context, or it felt like there were some barriers that were insurmountable. What would you say to them?
It's a great question. And I think, it's an experience actually we had as well. When we moved to Los Angeles, our Alpha struggled. We did it twice as a young church plant and everyone came, maybe a few non-Christian spouses came. And then it, one infamous evening, my wife and I were running, I think, our third Alpha and we had lots of pizza ordered and we leafleted and told everyone. And then by 7:30, by 8 o'clock, no one had showed up. We just had, infamously, no guests and a lot of uneaten pizza. And we just said to ourselves, well, maybe Alpha doesn't work in Los Angeles. Maybe just doesn't work here. The soil is too hard. And what I find is that's a very common statement. Wherever you are in the world, we struggle to get alpha really working at times, and we can think the soil is too hard. But that was challenged, actually, because I knew that probably wasn't right, because we had run alpha in London, Geneva, Switzerland, Vancouver, Canada, Raleigh, North Carolina, in the Bible Belt, and it all thrived. Yeah. And I thought, hang on a minute, LA is not that dissimilar to some of these big global cities. So all to say is we went on a journey of asking the, I think, courageous question of why our alpha isn't working. And we were brave enough to ask people, actually, why don't you bring your friends? Be honest with me. And then you go, ooh, gosh, yeah, I wouldn't bring my friends to that either. Why do non-Christians not want to do it? If they come on the first night, why don't they stay and be actual? I need honesty from people. And then what we did, we whiteboarded all of these questions, and we realized there was about 30 barriers to our alpha thriving. Not because alpha was wrong, but people were scared of it, or people had a bad experience of it. People were nervous to risk their relationship with their friend or their boss without knowing it's going to be safe. There was all these barriers. So what we found is if you're honest with your congregation and say, look, give me honesty, why don't you bring your friends to Alpha? It could be, you know what, I hear Brother Jim is running Alpha and he just preaches at people. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bring my friend where beloved Brother Jim doesn't actually listen, he more preaches. So we had a lot of issue of, wow, yeah, there's a lot of fear in bringing friends to Alpha. We don't know what it is. I don't know how to explain it. It's like answer the questions of life, but then you talk about Jesus every week. That's kind of like bait and switch. So anyway, what we did, we listed all of those barriers. We then put in, Lord, give us wisdom how to overcome these barriers.
Yeah.
And we felt, oh, once we started to do practices to overcome all the barriers people said, we started to see people invite their friends. We saw people stick around, and we went and we've just seen alpha grow and grow. Yeah. But we're now 400 to 500 people on an alpha course. Yeah. But it's because we actually empathized with the person inviting.
Yeah.
And we empathized with the non-Christian and go, how do we help both?
Yeah.
And that actually did mean a lot of work, but joyful, because, oh my gosh, this is just like going to Zacchaeus' house. That's what they need.
That's right.
So we found it a great adventure. We're still, every time we do alpha, we find new barriers and we go, oh, okay, how do we overcome that?
Well, and it sounds like you need to really not only curate the space for alpha, you really need to curate the people as well in terms of like who's showing up for that, right? That's a...
Yeah, we actually, alpha is a unique, very unique way of leading a small group, which is less, isn't about teaching or preaching, is about listening and being loving and relational. The teaching and preaching happens at the front. The group is about listening to them and not actually giving answers. And that's so foreign to people who've been taught that evangelism is by preaching and letting heresy just explode around the group because people are sharing what they think and not combating it feels like we're not faithful to the gospel. But as we trust the process, what we realize is if you're willing to lead and love a group in that way, the words are still being preached, that's fine. Then what we find is people's hearts are softened. Mm-hmm. Once they're heard, then they start to listen, you know. Mm-hmm. But what we find is lots of people just don't do that. They don't listen. When a non-Christian says, I just don't believe Jesus existed, they go, I've got to answer the question. I've got to tell them, but look, you know. And you go, no, no, no. That will mean the non-Christian won't come back because here, you're just preaching at me. So we curate very carefully. Are you willing to go along with this alpha process to listen and learn and love more than teach and preach and allow the Holy Spirit to work through that? And for people who can't do that, we just say, look, we don't think alpha is the best for you. Why don't you lead in a different ministry? And that's why also we've had to come to the conclusion of if you're a Christian and you want to do alpha, you can only really do alpha as a host or helper because we've trained you how to behave in a group. Because if you're not trained, you'll be the person in the group listening to the heresy, seeing the leaders not say anything, and you'll be going, God called me here to answer questions. Now I know why I'm in this group. We actually, what we say, we quarantine Christians. We don't let them in groups. Not because we don't love them, but they just don't know what an alpha group is. And they. So again, we do curate those groups in such a way and curate alpha in such a way that they feel loved by people who genuinely want to get to know their story and learn what their faith position is. And you got to want to love people there. And I love that Jesus went to the woman in the well and just asked and saw deep into her soul. And we were able to love people well in that.
Yeah. It is essential for C4SO as a diocese for evangelism to be central to our life together, to the kinds of things that we're talking about, to equipping people, to training people. What's your confidence level thinking about C4SO churches across the country, mix of different locations, people, churchmanship, emphases, regardless of where they're coming from? If there's a heart and a desire there to lean into evangelism, that they can do that.
I have confidence that our leaders, our pastors, our priests, our rectors, I've got confidence they love the lost. You know, if you know the gospel as we do, well, you know, Jesus wept over Jerusalem. He came to seek and save the lost. For God so loved the world, he gave his one and only son. We love the lost. And that is where I think fundamentally the battle is won. Do you love the lost? I think we do. Yeah. I think secondly, we have a great opportunity to go, we don't have to dumb down our Sundays. And that's not, we're not being asked to do that.
Yeah.
What being asked, if I could put it in a succinct way, we're trying to create Zacchaeus' house somewhere. And that actually, what a joy. What an adventure. Mm. Mm. And even if only one or two people come, what a joy I get to spend some time with non-Christians exploring Jesus. Yeah. I think the battle is raising confidence amongst our people to bring their friends. Because I think there is that sense of, I don't want to risk relationship. I don't want to come across as judgmental. I don't want to be preachy or pushy. So I do think the more you're able to go, we're going to do this. We're going to create a space where your friends feel safe. Look, why don't you come and experience it first before you bring your friend? But we're going to go on a journey to feed the following, but to help the exploring. If I know one thing about C4SO pastors, they love Jesus, they love the gospel, and you can't help them but go, okay, well, let's go where Jesus is, and he's walking the streets. And he's doing this, so let's join him in that.
Garrett, love what you're doing. Thanks for this conversation today. So helpful and exciting. Thank you.
Bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the C4SO podcast. If you found this episode useful, please be sure to subscribe and leave a review. That's how good conversations spread.